Welcome to the Addiction Solution Podcast. I'm Michelle Dunbar. Enjoy listening and watching as addiction experts Mark Sheeran and I cover controversial as well as helpful topics on addiction, how to move past it, and other related subjects. As two of the co-founders of the Freedom Model, Mark and I will give you a completely new perspective on the topics that matter to you. We will take to task the Recovery Society's lies and misinformation and replace them with facts, research, and the methods to move on from addiction struggles without 12-step meetings, rehabs, and the shackles of endless recovery. Let's escape the treatment and recovery trap together and learn to be free. Welcome to the truth.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Addiction Solution Podcast. My name is Mark Sheeran.
I'm Michelle Dunbar.
And along with our colleague, Stephen Slate, we wrote that book, The Freedom Model for Addictions, Escape the Treatment and Recovery Trap. So this week, I want to talk about something that came out of a short coaching session I had this week. Nothing private about
that. No, God, no.
But it was a topic that was really, really, really super interesting. And it's a question I get fairly often. And that is, can you apply the Freedom Model to other things besides just substance use or the typical sort of addiction, problems?
Right.
Whether it's fetishes or substance use, you know, we hit those things pretty heavy.
Yeah. Can you apply it, for example, to procrastination or, I don't know. Just kind of any habits like scrolling on your phone or like kind of time wasters or habits that are
problematic,
but maybe don't rise to the level of people thinking them as addictions, or, you know, maybe you're just doing something a little more than you think you want to.
Yeah. And also there's another class of problems that people ask this about. For example, like, does the Freedom Model have any application at all to things like marital troubles, or any sort of difficult decision making where somebody might have a change in lifestyle that is maybe a new career and they're really confused about it? And so I want to frame this out in a certain way. So many things in life are a problem to navigate through because the options are very close in value. So when you have two or three options and the happiness value or the benefits value, right, we're talking about the Freedom Model here, the things that are attractive about those options, whether it's heroin or whether it's, you know, do I stay with my wife or do I leave? Do I get a divorce or do I stay in that job or don't I? Or do I go to this new job? And if those options tend to be really close, we can get extremely stressed out, anxiety ridden. It can become very confusing. One of the biggest ones we deal with in the Freedom Model, so we'll back up for a second, is with an addiction, quote unquote, where the heavy use has a lot of benefits.
And perceived benefits.
Perceived benefits. And then the not using or moderating has many benefits as well that are very equal. And so they hover near each other when you're comparing it in your mind. And that can become very confusing because you may tend to go back to the drug of choice because that's what you know to do based on the perceived benefits.
That's it. I think we got to make sure everybody understands we're talking about perceived benefits.
Mm-hmm. Good point.
Because when you think about the perceived benefits being very close, a lot of times the benefits you believe you're getting from the heavy use are not from the substance itself. They're your interpretation. And even your interpretation, a lot of times when you start analyzing it, ends up falling short of the perceived benefits you're trying to get. And so a lot of times people, you know, when you're considering those options and you're thinking you're romanticizing on the front end what you're going to get when you get drunk, when you open that bottle of wine, you're romanticizing all the wonderful things that are going to happen. And then somewhere along the way, you forget about the romanticizing and you may actually start having the opposite, right? But you don't recognize it and you don't remember it. So your perception is that the benefits are close, right?
Yeah.
The benefits of abstinence are very close. And right now I feel like shit and I'm abstinent. I'm sober and I'm feeling like shit. So I'm going to feel a little better. And maybe when you first open that bottle of wine, just like when you get up in the Christmas morning, just before you open your presents, you're like, oh, this is going to be amazing, right? You have that anticipation, but it doesn't get better than that.
That's right. And so, you know, you get some sort of expectancy result and then it wears out. And then you suddenly realize that the benefits are really marketing narratives, maybe cartel narratives, that the drug is going to do all this magical stuff that it doesn't do. And you start to figure that out, right?
Yeah.
And so the perceived benefits with the freedom model, you start to drop the perceived benefits of one option over the other. And when you realize that maybe moderation or abstinence has actual benefits that are objectively true, and there might be some benefits of the drug experience that are objectively true. For instance, maybe you like the physical feeling or something like that. So, but liking a physical feeling compared to all the benefits of abstaining or moderating may not even be close to one another. But if you hold on to the narratives of the marketing that the drug relieves stress, that it does all these things, these perceptions and romanticizing of it makes it equal. And so when you're in that sort of flow where you're trying to navigate and analyze, it's really important to know the truth.
Yeah.
About what is actually happening to you and what your perceptions are and what those what perceptions are actually objectively true and those that aren't. Now, we have tons of podcasts on that. And that entire analysis process is really what the freedom model is all about. It's all about understanding exactly what the experience is objectively giving you and providing you. And then debunking all the mythology and seeing the drug or the fetish for what it is. Okay. So that's a big part of the freedom model. But there's other things with the freedom model. And so I want to talk about this whole other question is, does the freedom model apply to life problems? Not necessarily addictions and or what we term addictions. And the answer is absolutely. And here's fundamentally why. Let's talk about, in my case, when my marriage was going through a hard time, I was in the middle of writing the very beginning of the freedom model and really getting involved in the research behind the positive drive principle and the fact that we are always moving and trying to experience happiness. And that experience of understanding the positive drive saved my marriage for me. My wife didn't know I was going through this, but the analysis that I really did want to stay and make this work was very exciting because I think for me and my wife at the time, we were going through a very hard time together and we had grown quite far from each other. So it's important. And there's the three attributes, and I'm going to let Michelle jump in here. There's the three attributes of free will, personal autonomy, and the positive drive that we all inherently are born with. And these are mindful things. These are attributes of our human psyche. They are the attributes of how we see things in the world with our mind, not our brain, not our bodies. It's literally what we see and how we are motivated. So these three things are the foundation of the freedom model. So the answer to the question in a simple term is, you're born with these three attributes, which are problem-solving attributes and capabilities, and they're internal to every human. So of course the freedom model would apply to everything, any problem.
I was just thinking when he was talking about habit and you may not even be aware of, I don't think I was aware of the positive drive principle. I wasn't aware of any of that. And most people I think go through life especially as you get older, right? I heard somebody say, I think it was Joe Dispenza said, you know, by the age of 37, something like 90% of what you do is habituated. And I don't know if that's true, but it certainly makes sense that you, I mean, I drive to work every day and most of the time I don't remember it at all because it's the same path, right? Same path every day. And it doesn't mean that I'm not choosing because I don't remember it. It just means that everything, the processing is so fast because I've done that path the same time every day. And right from the moment you get up in the morning and so everything is habituated, but you're still following those habits because of the positive drive, because you habituate things that initially were valuable to you. Now, that habituation can be good and bad, even in relationships. And that's what I was thinking is I've been with my husband since 1990, so 36 years. And you know, we've gone through a lot together. We were basically children when we met, like 20 and 22. And you habituate relationships. And sometimes they can be in a positive direction and sometimes they can be in a negative direction. And you may not even know how that even works. Like, we all bring our own baggage to our relationships. So what I'm saying is just because you've habituated things that are no longer helpful to you. Sometimes you habituate things that seem helpful on the outset, which is substance use is the same, but anything, the way you eat, the way you get ready in the morning. Sometimes you have to reevaluate and say, wait a minute, maybe going to bed at midnight every night is not working well for me anymore. And, you know, changing a habit like bedtime can take a little while, you know? So sometimes habituation is physical, as in the case of when you choose to go to bed at night, what your nighttime routine is, what your morning routine is. But you can always become mindful and change a habit. And the positive drive principle, when you understand it, you can sit back and evaluate, would I rather have the benefits of staying up till midnight watching Netflix? Like, I think about things like that. Or do I really want to go to bed at 10 o'clock?
Yeah. So something I think that is a nuance there that's really important for the viewers is, notice you didn't say how when in that analysis, if you're going to use the positive drive as an analytical tool, you're not saying, oh, if I don't go to bed at 8 tonight, I'm going to feel like shit tomorrow.
Right.
Now, that may be true. And of course, a consequence will always factor in, but the positive drive is a motivational force based on positivity. So you might say the analysis would change from, if I don't go to bed at 8 o'clock, I'm going to feel like shit tomorrow. It goes to, if I go to bed at 8 tonight, I'm going to feel good. And how good will I feel if I go to bed at 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock? And what are the benefits of going to bed at 10 o'clock? Well, I get to watch Netflix, you know? And is that really important to me tonight? Or would the sleep be better? So the benefit of staying up is watching Netflix and enjoying the show. The benefit of going to bed is going to sleep. And you may say, you know what? I don't want to fucking go to sleep. So
I'm not ready to go to sleep.
So you stay up. But if you're mindful about it, you may find somewhere in the middle of the show, I'm kind of tired. And now what's happening is you're using the positive drive to say, I would rather sleep, not, oh, fuck, I dread tomorrow. I'm going to, you know.
Keep sitting here watching TV when I should be sleeping.
Right. And then guilt and shame can come into it. And I should be going to bed. That's the healthy thing to do. Instead of, I'm really enjoying the show.
Yeah.
You live in the moment. So you start to, when you start to use the positive drive, you start to realize in moments in time, I'm making decisions. And I'm basing those decisions on what I actually want to have happen. And this is why we say procrastination doesn't really exist. Procrastination is quite literally a bullshit term. Nobody procrastinates. People just make decisions in moments in time on what they value, one thing over another. Now, when you become mindful of it, though, yes, that's the key, is stepping back for a second in that moment and going, wait a minute, I'm procrastinating. No, let me shed the label. Number one, first thing to do. Has nothing to do with the positive drive, you know, giving myself a label and feeling like shit about it.
Okay? Right, right. A negative label.
Yeah. That does nothing to change behavior, because there's no motivational value in feeling like shit. Okay. So instead of saying I'm a procrastinator or I'm doing something unhealthy, you say, wait a minute, I choose this. I have chosen this moment in time. It's the best use of my time, obviously, because I'm doing it.
Yeah.
You know, and what is the value of that? And what would the value be, the positive value of changing it? And this is true. Now, I want to dovetail this idea of comparing things based on the merits of the positivity of them. I want to go into the marriage problems, because it was really profound for me. Changed everything, and it has totally revolutionized my marriage ever since. It started with, you know, I was so caught up in the resentments and the loneliness that I was feeling and all the pain, and she was too. And then, you know, we had a pretty good marriage for a long time, a great marriage. I mean, it was amazing. And then we slowly, kids and stresses of work and her stresses, and you're two different people, and it becomes complicated.
Well, and you bring your baggage from the ghosts from the past. It's just endless.
And then I was so focused on all of that, and the shame and the guilt and the misery and the resentments and the contempt and all this stuff, that none of it motivated me to change. None of it motivated me to look at myself clearly and ask what I could control. And so when I was writing the Freedom Model and getting into the positive drive, and I was doing the research, I asked myself, what would I let go of all the negativity and shame and guilt and all that stuff, all the bad stuff, literally just pushed it out the door and said, would I be happier leaving? And it became very clear. No. I mean, it was so clear so quickly that I was like, no, I wouldn't be happier leaving. I would be happier staying. That was number one. And then I said, why? That shocked me. Because when I looked at all the positive things, it became very motivational to stay. I was like, holy shit, I love this person. And within a couple of days, we kind of talked, and what was on the verge of just being separated and being miserable wasn't that anymore. And it opened up dialogues, and I was like, let me, you know, I really do want to be with this person. She's my world. What the hell am I thinking? And it really was. Now, that's not to say that all the problems went away, but what it allowed me to do was be able to navigate through it to a better place.
Well, it allows you to become mindful, right? So you start to become mindful and be like, okay, I want to stay in this relationship. Because I think, let's be honest, I've been with this man 36 years, my husband 36 years, and we went through it multiple times where there was at least three separate times where we were on the verge of separating. Once when my kids were young, and then two more times, once when they were teens, and then once after they left, the kids left. And
the big changes.
Yeah, the big changes in life, right? Mm-hmm. So with each time, once you become mindful and you do accept the idea that, okay, I can only control me. I'm the only person that I have any control over, and my happiness is up to me. And so once I stopped looking for my happiness outside of myself, which was the first thing,
yeah,
right? Because I have the power to make me happy and nobody else does. And once you decide, okay, I do want to stay. I do want to be with this person. I believe I'm happier in the relationship than not in the relationship. I believe that's true. I wasn't sure. But clearly, I want to say something about the positive drive principle. It's always at work.
That's right.
Right? It just depends on whether you recognize it or not, right?
That's right.
That's when you get to take control of your life for real. I mean, you're always in control, but that's when you get to direct it, is when you say, you set everything aside and you say, okay, I believe I can be happier in this relationship than out of it. However, here's some things I need to be happy. Here's like, and I allowed me to objectively start to look at what would I want for this relationship that I can change for me. And, you know, I can hear some women saying, well, my husband's abusive or whatever. Well, then maybe you come to the conclusion you're happier out of the relationship, because you have to at the same time accept I can't change this other person. However, I can have an open dialogue with this person on, you know, here's some things about our relationship and about your behavior specifically that I find troubling and I wish we could come together on. Well, and do you know what I mean?
Yeah. So I think that what you're saying is there's what the positive drive does is when you start to realize that my current situation has been chosen by me.
Yes.
And you ratchet your thoughts back to the moment and you say, in this moment, I got here because I value everything that got me here. And people say, no, you don't value the pain, the abuse. Of course, I don't value that, but I do value the scraps of love maybe that they gave me. Then you become aware of, wait, I think I'm worth scraps of love. Maybe I would like more love and no abuse. See, now you can challenge it when you take responsibility for the place that you exist. And I do this with everybody that I coach. You know, they'll say, I keep doing this, but I don't want to. And I go, that's a lie.
Right.
That's 100% false. 100%. Because you do heroin. It doesn't leap into your arm. You do it because in that moment, it is the best use of your time from your perspective. Because if that wasn't true, you wouldn't.
No.
Now, why is that important? And we're going to go over this in our free live event here in a week. We're recording this in September 2026, by the way, because this will be forever.
Yes. Our free live event is coming up on the 17th of September.
Yeah.
2026.
So when you ratchet back and you pull things back into the moment, what happens is you're able to look at something and go, wait a minute. Maybe I can change this. There are certain things I do want to be changing. And that's what Michelle was talking about. But you cannot do that until you own your life. You have to own your habit and say, this is the best use of my time right now. And people are shocked at that. They say, there's no way that boot and heroin is the best use of my time. And I go, bullshit, because you're doing it. You're doing it. So, and I've talked about this in the most recent podcast because it's super helpful to own your marriage, to own your relationship with your children, to own your career, and to own the failings in it, and to own all of the baggage and say, okay, this is who I am. Now, I'm not talking about childhood traumas and things like that. We don't own that. It's just our experience and it's painful and sometimes we're victims. But once we hit 18, 20 years old and we're out in the world, we're creating our experiences. And that's not to say that you can't be victimized. You can be victimized. But from an emotional perspective, in the majority of life, when you start to own your choices, right? And you start to go, wait a minute. Oh my God, you know, I'm here because I do value being loved by this man or this woman, but I think I want more. That's okay to say, but you can't say that until you own what is true. And so that is the vital part.
There is another caveat to this, though. You can own it without judging, right?
Without self-hate.
Without self-hate. Because sometimes we do own what we do, and then we play the victim on that side of ourselves, right? You think, well, I am just this person. I am an addict. I am lazy. I mean, you take on these labels in an effort sometimes to try and motivate yourself out of the behavior, and it always falls flat, right? It may motivate you for a very short period of time to do something different, but it doesn't stick because you don't see happiness doing the different thing. And yet, because you never owned what you did in the first place. So own who you are, what you do, without judging it. Just be curious about it.
And I want to say something for the people that have been abused in the cults of AA and the recovery society. We're not talking about the bastardized version of the freedom model that AA purports, where it says, you know, you have to look at your side of the street endlessly. And because that, what they are proposing is that everything is your fault. Even being raped, you know, your side of the street. How did you set yourself up for being raped? I mean, you can have sponsors say shit that is so destructive and painful. That's not what we're advocating for. What we're advocating for is your choices.
Yeah.
Your legitimate choices that you've made, not being victimized.
Right, right.
And so now... One of the reasons I bring up relationships is it can be a mixed bag of abuse and love, which is enormously, enormously complicated at first.
And confusing.
So separating it with the freedom model, knowing I have free will, I have my autonomy, I get to choose what I want in my life. And then understanding the positive drive, you may say, I want more love and less abuse. Now, that may seem obvious, but it's not obvious to the person who is just focused on surviving.
Yeah.
Then survival becomes the expression of your positive drive. And being a victim then can become your identity too. And that's where things get really dangerous for you. So in a lot of cases, it's, What do I really want? Who do I want to be? And what do I want my future to look like? Well, you cannot make that analysis until you own your circumstances without judgment, without self-hate, without guilt. You have to push all those emotions out and say, I have created the life I have right now. How do I navigate to a better place? But you cannot get to the next step or the next place without recognizing where you are. That's the key here, the clarity of I am this situation now with all its ugliness and all its beauty.
And I am it because I chose it.
Yes.
Whether I chose it mindfully,
right,
or consciously, knowingly is irrelevant. I've still always chosen it.
And now with understanding that you have expressions of your positive drive, you are knowing. You are able to say, I am this capable person because I was born with capability, positive drive, free will, and autonomy. I'm born with capability.
Yeah.
It's an inside job. Holy shit. My world is a mindful situation. I get to choose how I live my life. And so the freedom model, although the book is centered on substance use and fetishes, right? Predominantly substance use. If you understand its underpinnings of these attributes, you can apply it to everything. I mean, everything from, like I said, careers, relationships, all these things. Now, I want to say one thing about relationships, which I think is really important. One of the reasons that I think coaching works so well, in conjunction with the freedom model, why we became coaches, why it became a necessity, is research and data and the understanding of drug cartels and marketing and narratives and recovery ideology, all these things matter as data points of understanding, oh, I've been lied to in all these different ways, and I am going to debunk all those lies. That's fairly dry and understandable. What is a little more difficult is everything that we've said in this podcast can be applied to relationships, except one part. And that is, there's another sentient being with their own positive drive, free will, and autonomy at play.
Yep.
And their situation may not be the same perspective that you're going to carry. And so that adds a complication that can only be dealt with real clarity of what you want, like Michelle described, but also an understanding of this person has needs and wants too, and whether I want to be a part of that. Do I want to? And I wanted nothing more than to be a part of that with my wife. I was interested in her opinion. And when we came together, it was super exciting. It was like, holy shit, we were friends again. And if you're married and you're friends, you can get through anything.
For sure.
You know, the whole sex thing becomes a little lower on the totem pole, and just a lot of the intimacy, although you need that. If you have that really tight friendship, it goes a long way to resolve a lot of the other stuff. So yeah, it's pushing out the guilt and shame, letting go of have to's, letting go of labels, letting go of self-hate. You can't flog yourself and coerce yourself and whip yourself with pain and consequences into changing. It's not going to work very well. Because your positive drive only works on positivity. It only works on benefits. It's only seeking a better position. That's the way humans are motivated. We are not motivated by pain. And so pain may be something that makes us look around.
And not for very long anyways.
Yeah, it just doesn't work well. Because motivation is motivation. It's forward motion. It's not, I hate pain and I hate you and I hate this situation. That can kind of push you out of a certain set of circumstances for a second, and then it's time to start being motivated to get out of that crater.
It's literally a shift in perspective, a shift in thinking, from being reactionary to proactive. I always use the example of, you can only run from a lion for so long, and eventually, if your only motivation is running from the lion, you'll probably get eaten, yeah. Right? But if you're running towards something and you're seeking, you know, if your motivation is, I want to live, right? And I want to live happily and healthily, and you can go a long ways.
Yeah, and it's the difference between running from something that you hate,
or that you fear.
And which really is in that scenario, you're still concentrating on the object of pain, the thing that you are frightened of. And so you're giving it credence and value. And so you're not really motivated. It's sort of blindly moving forward or running from the lion and then getting creative about your future. And that is, oh, I better climb a tree, or I better find somebody with a gun to get rid of this lion, or whatever it might be. Maybe I have to feed the lion. Yeah. And you get creative. And in life, that's what the positive drive is all about. It's like creating this tapestry of all these options. And it happens really quick when you start thinking.
Yeah. So when you start paying attention, right? That's all mindfulness is you're paying attention to what motivates you and the choices that you're making in any given moment.
So the freedom model applies to everything. So if you read the book and you really, really pay attention, you'll be absolutely amazed how it applies to everything.
You will. All right. In just a few days, by the time this is released, we have our free live event. It's at noon on Thursday, September 17th. And noon Eastern time. So if you're in the UK, that's 5 p.m. your time. If you're on the West Coast of the US, that is 9 a.m. your time. So we put it kind of in the middle of the day here on the East Coast to try and get as many people, available to come as possible, right? But if you can't attend it live, if you're at work, if it's the middle of the night for you, like as in people over in New Zealand or Australia, enroll anyways, and you can watch the replay. I'll have the replay posted by Friday the 18th. So that you can watch it.
And so there's another side to this that's really important, and that is going to be the launch event for Successful Moderation with the Freedom Model course. And that course is going to be a self-contained course of every single product that we offer, coupled with a new book specifically about moderating your use or a fetish. And it's important to know that every single part of that course also applies to abstinence, because if you can moderate, you certainly can abstain.
Yeah.
So if you're looking for a solution, but you really are somebody that's looking for moderating whatever it is you're struggling with and just lowering it on the scale, but still enjoying it at some level, you're going to want that course.
And basically, the course is all about freedom, right? Whether you are somebody that is a heavy substance user and you feel like you're a slave to the substance, or you're in recovery and you're now a slave to recovery, which still means you're a slave to the substance, right? Because now you're avoiding it. All of that is taken care of. You will find actual freedom to create the life that you want. And I can't explain it. This is one of those things where if you've lived feeling like a slave to something for a long time, it's tough for us to explain what it feels like not to be.
Yeah.
So no matter how long you've been in recovery, how long you've been struggling with your fetish issue, whatever it is, you're going to get everything you need to learn to be able to solve your problem within this course. So, and I know once we start we started talking about it, it's creating a lot of fervor online. Every time we talk about moderation, people get all kinds of twisted.
They do.
So, but I know that there are a number of people that are looking for that solution. And so we're going to have it. It's going to be available to you next week.
And there's no moderation program like what
this is not offer. About counting drinks.
Yeah, this is about being free.
Yeah.
And being successful.
Yep.
All right.
So great. Hey, you can always reach us at 888-424-2626 if you want to set up a free consultation to learn about coaching, or go to thefreedommodel.org. You can get our books, our audiobook, and all of our online courses are at thefreedommodel.org.
All right, everybody. Take care.